We're going to talk about an expression. The expression is lock and load. According to the Department of Army, the Field Manual 322.9 from 2008, a modern soldier training with his M4 or M16 hears the firing line command, lock your first 20-round magazine and load. Notice, first of all, the arrangement. Lock comes first, then load. There's also a definition. Lock, referring to inserting the magazine into the rifle, the soldier attaches the magazine and chambers around. Okay, so for those of you who don't know what a gun is, this little thingy right here is called a magazine. This is the magazine well. All right, so the man or woman, the soldier, shoves the magazine up into the magazine well, okay? And when she or he does that, it locks in. And then the soldier retracts this, lets it go, and a bullet goes into the chamber. But of all this, what I want you to get is the locking refers to shoving this little thingy up into that thingy. Lock. And once that has happened, the soldier can then load a round into the chamber. So we have lock and load. According to a 1932 field manual regarding an M1903, which is just a totally different rifle, a soldier in 1932 with his M1903 hears the firing line command load and lock. And you'll notice that it's backwards from lock and load. So notice that it's backwards. Not only that, the definition of lock has changed. Lock with the M1903 referring to engaging the safety, the soldier chambers around and then engages the safety. Again, pictures. I love pictures. The soldier shoves this thingy into that thingy and then shoves the whole bolt forward, making a bullet, a round, go into the chamber, and then right here, that's the safety, and the soldier switches it over to the right side and locks the safety on. Now, you don't even have to pay attention to anything I just said, other than the fact that this is different from that. You can see that, you don't have to understand guns, that this thing and that thing are totally different. Now, the practical application here is, if a soldier from 1932 were to hear lock and load, they would not be able to do it because they have to load first before they can lock. And if a soldier from 2008 or now heard the command load and lock, that would make no sense to them because they first have to lock before they can load. Because the definition of this word has changed, each soldier has to hear the command as it pertains to their weapon. I think that's relatively clear. I hope it's relatively clear. This illustrates at least three things. Number one, through time, words change in meaning. If you're going to consult your big fancy books, they're going to say diachronic change. Dia meaning through, and chronic meaning chron, as in a chronograph. We have a chronograph right back there, right? The chronology. We see this word. Okay, so diachronic change. Through, time, change. Now, the importance of knowing the intended meaning and the potential danger of imposing the wrong meaning. I mean, granted, when people talk about guns, the first thing you talk about when you talk about guns is safety. And if you've got the wrong term and you don't understand it, boy, there could be some problems here. So, this is illustrating this. Now, a few words about two words. We're going to go out of guns and go into the Bible. A few words about two words. What we're going to talk about today, two lessons ago, which would have been 5 weekends ago. I don't know what it is, but the last time I was up here, I preached on one topic. Before that, I preached on following the New Testament pattern. It was basically a first century Christian living in the 21st century, if you remember that. It said, go back to the pattern, find the pattern. This lesson is primarily following that theme. What is the pattern of the New Testament, specifically regarding singing? Before we get there, the first word we want to talk about is this word, church. I think most of you will recognize that word. For example, from Matthew 16, when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, verse 13, Matthew 16, 13, he was asking his disciples, who do people say the Son of Man is? And they said, some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. He said to them, but who do you say that I am? And Simon Peter answered and said, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Now this is very important in Jesus' timeline, and now he can go back to his Father. Somebody gets who I am. That's the point of Matthew. I'm getting a totally different point out of this. Verse 17, Jesus said to him, blessed are you, Simon Barjona, because flesh and blood did not reveal this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. I also say to you that you are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church. All right. That word, church. The question is, what exactly was Jesus referring to? What exactly was Jesus going to build? What was he saying? I'm going to build my church. So we have some definitions. First of all, Merriam-Webster, if you looked it up, definition numero uno. I speak Spanish too. A building for public and especially Christian worship. That's definition number one. Was Jesus going to build a building? Definition number two. Was Jesus referring to a lawful assembly in a free Greek city of all those who possessed the rights of citizenship for the transaction of public affairs? Was Jesus going to build that? The word is used this way in Acts chapter 19. The same word in Acts chapter 19. So Paul's at Ephesus, and they're converting some people, and everybody gets in an uproar. Hey, if these people keep on converting from our goddess to the real God, then we're going to lose business. So they drag him in. Verse 30, when Paul wanted to go into the assembly, here's our word. Same word as church in Matthew 16, here's assembly. And we'll see it again. So this assembly gets rather an uproar. Verse 39, the pagan, the heathen ruler says, if you want anything beyond it, it shall be settled in a lawful, here's our word again, assembly. For indeed we are in danger of being accused of a riot in connection with today's event, since there is no real cause for it, and in this connection we will be unable to account for our disorderly gathering. After saying this, he dismissed the assembly. Here's our word again. The question is Jesus going to start a, and I'm just going to shorten it to a lawful assembly in a free Greek city? The word is also used of the Jewish nation. Acts chapter 7. In Acts chapter 7, Stephen is defending the fact that Jesus is greater than Moses. That's what he's defending. Right now he's talking about Moses. Verse 35. This Moses. Verse 36. This man. Still talking about Moses. Verse 37. This is the Moses. Verse 38. This is the one who was in the congregation, there's our word, in the wilderness together with the angel. This Moses was in, and here's our word. Now, the King James Version, if somebody's reading out of that, will have the word church. The word church is there. So here are three definitions that we see so far. Was Jesus going to build the congregation of the Jews together in the wilderness? Okay? And here's a fourth definition. Ephesians chapter 5. This is the passage. Wives, be subject to your own husbands, as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, just also as Christ is the head of the, here's our word, the church. He himself being the Savior of the body. See, body and church here are being used synonymously. He saved the body, he saved the church. We know what we're talking about. Verse 24. But as the, here's our word again, church is subject to Christ, also wives ought to be to their husbands and everything. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her, so that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her with the washing of the water by the word, so that he might present to himself the church in all her glory. Verse, where is it? Skip on down to 29. No one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church. And then in verse 32, this mystery is great, but I'm speaking with reference to Christ and the church. Okay, here's this word scattered all over this text. Right? Here are four different meanings of this very same word. At least our word, church, right? Trench, in the synonyms of the Old Testament, big piece of literature. There are words whose history is peculiarly, I have a difficult time saying that one, interesting to watch as they obtain deeper, the part. It had one meaning, and then it has an meaning. A meaning-er. It got some meaning-er to it. Okay, so it's changing through time. Can't see it there. And receive a new consecration in the Christian church. Words which the church did not invent, but has assumed into its service and employed in a far loftier sense. It had one sense. Christians, the Bible now uses it in a different sense than any which the world has ever put before them. The very word by which the word church is named is itself an example. A more illustrious one could scarcely be found of this progressive ignobling of a word. For we have church in three distinct stages of meaning. The heathen, the Jewish, and the Christian. Okay? Here's the heathen, here's the Jewish, and here's the Christian. And now the way they're using the word Christian, that would also actually include up here. I just want to point out that I'm not the only one saying that this word, the meaning of it, changed through time. So we ask our question, what exactly was Jesus referring to? What was he going to build? Let's try. Let's do a little plug-in. This is what you do when you're trying to interpret the text. Let's use this word first. Was he going to build a building? Keep your finger where it is. Turn to Romans 16. Romans 16, verse 5, in which Paul writes to the church in Rome. He writes in Romans 16, verse 5, greet the church that is in their house. Okay, here's that word again. The question is Jesus and Paul talking about a building? Imagine it, picture it. You go into somebody's house. The Bosworths are building a relatively larger house than at least ours is. And you go inside of that, and inside of that is actually a church building. He says, greet the church. So the next time you go to the Bosworths and they have a church building in their house, you go up and you pet it and you say, hello, church. That's obviously ridiculous. Did Jesus die for a building? No. Okay, and so we scratch this one off because we understand that we are not going to force an older or new meaning on a word. Okay, when we see that, it would be ridiculous. Could you imagine somebody interpreting it that way? I can actually imagine it. But you would realize, no, this is just wrong, and you would have a hard time maybe showing them that, but maybe not. Okay, so you don't force a newer meaning. We do this with baptism. Everybody in here recognizes that the word baptism in the Bible refers to what? Immersion, and that's it. And so we have this problem. We go up and we talk to somebody else who believes, no, baptism, also, were you baptized? Yes, I was sprinkled. Ugh. No, that's a later definition of the word. That is not the New Testament definition, and we have to go through that. We understand this. All right, we don't force a newer meaning. We don't force an older meaning either. Now, actually, these two words are, although they are older, they are still in effect in the New Testament because we just read them. So this wouldn't be forcing an older meaning on the word church. It actually wouldn't. It would be, the question is though, is this the meaning? Are either of these two the meaning? No, because Jesus says, I will build my church, and the church that is the Jewish nation was built on the rock Sinai. Okay? And Jesus is not going to create a lawful assembly that's already been created. So he's not talking about this thing. An example of forcing an older meaning on a newer word would be the word, an extra biblical example would be the word nice. Jonathan is very nice. Ethan is very nice. We understand what we're talking about, except the word originally meant ignorant. Oh, he's very nice. He's very nice. Right? And but we realize, look, I can't use that. I might encode. You're very nice. I know when I'm going to get laid. Trust me. It was worth it, though. So, you understand. No, we're stuck down here. Jesus is referring to this down here. That's what he is building. All right. So, there was a little exercise in going, taking a word, and even a biblical word, and seeing how we got to be careful with the definition. We're not going to take one that's from 2,000 years later, or actually not even 2,000 years later. We're not going to take one from before it if that's not the one that Jesus intended. Now, the second word is translated in our Bibles, two words, and that is making melody. In Ephesians 5, 18 and 19. So Ephesians 5. Verse 15. Be careful how you walk. That's a good lesson right there. Not as unwise man, but as wise, making the most of your time because the days are evil. So then do not be foolish, but understand what is the will of the Lord. Do not get drunk with wine, for that is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit. So he's saying, avoid spirits. You get it, what I'm doing with the word right there? We use the word spirits to refer to alcohol. They didn't. But I'm making a pun, avoid spirits, but latch on to the Spirit. That's not saying find the best spirit there is out there and start drinking it. That's not what this is saying. Okay. Do not get drunk with wine, for that is dissipation. But, here's the opposite, be filled with the Spirit. Speaking to one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, singing and, here's our word, making melody. Let's just stop right there. All right, so our word, making melody. We got to look at this word. Because some will say, this word originally meant to pluck, as in a bow or a harp, etc. Does this passage give us authority to include man-made instruments into our song service? Now, some will say, I ask the question, some will assert it, the word originally meant to pluck. This gives us, this passage right here, gives us authority to pluck a piano, or pluck a guitar, or have some kind of man-made instrument. Now, I distinguish man-made instrument from God's made instrument, which is right here. We often refer to it as instrumental music. Well, when I sing, I'm doing instrumental music, technically. We understand what I'm talking about. All right, so they go to this text because you can't find a statement anywhere, you can't find an example anywhere, you can't find a command anywhere for using instrumental music. So they got to go somewhere. The question is, does this authorize it? First, we admit, yes, this word did originally mean to pluck. We don't ever not admit that. That would be a mistake. It would be false. It does mean it. But don't force an older or newer meaning on a word. We understand this principle. No, I'm not saying that. So there. So it doesn't mean, I'm saying we have to be careful. Yes, it did originally mean it, but it may have changed. And we have to look out for that. There are only three other times, count them, one, two, three. Only three other times in the New Testament that this verb is used. The first one is Romans 15, 9. Romans 15 is you all get along, or for you in the South, y'all get along now. And they'd say you hear, but I really butchered that one up. Verse 7, accept one another. Why? Because Christ did. Especially you Jews and Gentiles accept one another. Why? Because Jesus died for you. Verse 9. Jesus died so that the Gentiles to glorify God for his mercy, as it is written. Now he quotes from Psalms, but he applies it to Jesus. Therefore I, this is Jesus from his perspective, I will give praise to you among the Gentiles, and I will sing, there's our word, to your name. Okay, you all get along. Why? Because Psalm 18 says to. Now, what does Psalm say? Psalm 18 says, therefore, I will give praise to your name among the Gentiles, and I will sing to your name. There's usage number one. We've got two more to look at. James 5. in James chapter 5. Is anyone among you suffering? He must pray. Is anyone cheerful? He is to sing praises. There's our word. Two of our three usages. And then the other one is 1 Corinthians 14. The context is speaking in tongues. Paul is saying, be careful about speaking in tongues, especially when you're assembled. And he's saying, look, you really want to prophesy. You don't want to speak in tongues. So, I mean, if you can speak in tongues, great. But really, while you're assembled, you want to be able to prophesy. Verse 13, 1 Corinthians 14, 13. Therefore, let the one who speaks in a tongue pray that he may interpret. For if I pray with a tongue, my spirit prays, but my mind is unfruitful. What is the outcome then? Then I will pray with the spirit, and I will pray with the mind also. I will sing with the spirit. I will sing with the mind also. Here's another passage with two more usages of this exact same word. Now, we have just covered every time this verb is used in the New Testament. And every one of your versions has the same word. Sing. Now, Ephesians 5:18 and 19. That word did originally mean to pluck. We admit. The question is, does it here mean pluck? I would suggest to you that, as in to play, pluck as in play, I said something confusing. Yes, it originally meant pluck, as in play, a bow or a harp or whatever. The question is, does it mean play in Ephesians chapter 5, or does it mean sing, or something accompanying singing? Okay? All of these passages translate that word with one word. All of the interpreters, now either they all got it wrong, or the meaning by the New Testament has changed. That's what you're arguing. It's me saying, oh, it originally meant pluck, which it did, so I can now play, or no, I'm sorry, the change has occurred, and this word means something else. It did mean pluck. It did mean play, but not anymore. Bauer, Denker, Arndt, and Gingrich. Yay. A lexicon. Very, very serious, top-notch, number one. I can speak English too. The original meaning of, here's our word, was pluck or play, a stringed instrument. This persisted at least to the time of Lucian, which is about 125 AD. So it could be then, in the Septuagint, this word frequently means to sing, whether to the accompaniment of an instrument or not, as is usually the case. By the time you get to the Septuagint, which is before this, it usually, not always, but it usually means, no, we're just singing. It means to sing exclusively. Oh, excuse me, this focus on singing continued until this word in modern Greek, like now, modern, means sing exclusively. Although the New Testament does not voice opposition to instrumental music, now pay attention, this is commentary. From here on out, you've got commentary. Okay? And does the New Testament voice opposition to instrumental music? What he's saying there is, it doesn't say thou shalt not. But hopefully we understand that the New Testament doesn't have to say thou shalt not. We understand how this works. The New Testament doesn't say thou shalt not sprinkle either, does it? But we understand when Jesus and God say, immerse, well, that's all he's got to say. And that rules out sprinkling. Here, when he says sing, that rules out playing. So, although the New Testament does not voice opposition to instrumental music, not explicitly, in view of Christian resistance to mystery cults, as well as Pharisaic aversion to musical instruments in worship, it is likely that some such sense as make melody is best understood in this Ephesian passage. Those who favor play may be relying too much on the earliest meaning. He himself admits, look, yes, the word did mean that. But the question is, what does it mean in this context? Now, if you want to play an instrument, it's got to be forced from there. It means it. It allows for it. You can do it. And even the lexicographer says, not really. All right. This word, solo, did originally mean to pluck. But this doesn't mean the word necessarily carries the same meaning here. And that's what we have to be careful of. even if it does mean play. And frankly, I think it does. Even if it does mean play, the question is, what are we told to play? Hold your finger in 1 Corinthians 14, back in Ephesians 5. Verse 18, do not get drunk with wine, for that is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit. How are we filled with the Spirit? Speaking to one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, singing and making melody. Now pay attention. The New American Standard and the ESV will say, with your heart. Other versions will say, in or of or from. It's either a dative of location or a dative of instrument. That's the difference. The one that says instrument, like my version in the ESV, it's a dative of instrument. This is the instrument you use. The others, it's the dative of location. Where are you playing? In your heart. Either way, it is a metaphor. Either way. Yes, play. Either play in your heart, yes. Or play with your heart. Yes. Either way. 1 Corinthians 14. The construction is exactly the same. The words are a little different, but the construction is the same. Verse 15. I will pray with the Spirit. I will pray with the mind also. Now listen. I will sing with the Spirit. It's the construction. That could be of the Spirit, could be from the Spirit, could be either. It's the construction is the same. I will sing with the Spirit. I will sing with the mind also. All right. In 1 Corinthians chapter 14, what is his point? His point is, look, if you're speaking in tongues, but you can't understand it, your spirit is sure making a lot of noise, but your mind is not. Your mind doesn't get it. That's why he says, look, pray that you interpret so your mind will get it. He is saying here, I want both my spirit to be involved, and I also want my mind to be involved. That's what he's saying here. Verse 13 of 1 Corinthians 14. Therefore, let one who speaks in a tongue pray that he may interpret. For I pray, if I pray with a tongue, my spirit prays, but my mind is unfruitful. I want my mind involved. What is the outcome then? I will pray with the Spirit. I will pray with the mind. I will sing with the Spirit. I will sing with the mind also. He is here saying, I want my heart in. When you're singing, when you're praying, you want your heart involved. That's what he's saying here. You also want your mind involved. You want to feel it, and you want to know it. In fact, you need to know it so that you can feel it. He's saying, I want both of these involved here. Now, 1 Corinthians 14, as the singer is to employ the mind, so the singer is to employ the heart. 1 Corinthians 14 is, I need my mind involved. Ephesians chapter 5 is, you need your heart involved. In both cases, the instrument is stated. In both cases, it's a metaphor. Don't sing without the mind and the heart engaged. Now, if there is not room for man-made instrument in 1 Corinthians 14, then there's no room for a man-made instrument in Ephesians chapter 5. They're saying the same thing. I have yet one time to have somebody ever turn to 1 Corinthians 14 and say, ha-ha, the original word is solo there, so we can have an instrument, because they wouldn't get that from that text, because they understand clearly what that text means. The same thing with Ephesians. It says it's meaning the same thing. Okay, does this matter? Let's go there in a minute. First of all, a couple arguments. What about David? He used instruments to worship to God, didn't he? Yeah, he did. I readily agree with that. He also offered sacrificed animals and had multiple wives. May we? Good luck with that one, husbands. Right? And you don't want it to begin with, right? That's the lesson of the Old Testament and from David and all those people. But he did it. He did them. The argument is, whatever David can do, we can do. Okay? Let's try it. Try it on for a little while. Try multiple wives. Can't? No, we may not. Try sacrifices. And they say, oh, but Jesus took away the sacrifice. Exactly. He took away the whole law. This is the other point, that he lived under the old law. 2 Chronicles. Keep your finger in 1 Corinthians 14. 2 Chronicles, chapter 29. Hezekiah. This is years after David has already been dead. The nation has been in full of sin. Hezekiah reforms. He brings back the temple worship. I'm going to start in verse 25. He then stationed the Levites in the house of the Lord with cymbals, with harps, with lyres, according to the command of David and of Gad, the king's seer, and of Nathan the prophet, for the command was from the Lord through his prophets. The Levites stood with musical instruments of David, and the priests with trumpets. Hezekiah gave the order to offer the burnt offering on the altar. When the burnt offering began, the song to the Lord also began with the trumpets, accompanied by the instruments of David, king of Israel. While the whole assembly worshipped, the singers also sang, and the trumpets sounded, and all this continued until the burnt offering was finished. Okay, I readily admit that they had lots of instruments back then. But did you catch the first verse? Verse 25. These are done according to the commandment of David and of Gad, the king's seer. Oh, so there's a prophet involved. And Nathan the prophet, for the command was from the Lord through his prophets. Now, you don't read of this in the Old Testament not being commanded, in the law of Moses being commanded, but here you do. Here you do. Why did David do it? Because God told him to. And when we're in the New Testament, we need to find 2 Chronicles 29, 20 through 28 in the New Testament. And God said, do this. Or they were doing it because God said, we need to find something like that, and we don't find it. Because they're under the old law, and we look for things under the law that we live under. What about Revelation? There are instruments in Revelation, right? Yes, there's also incense, isn't there? And by the way, there's a dragon there, isn't there? So let's bring a dragon in next time that we have some worship, right? No, you get the point. May we? We never see New Testament Christians, not one time. Search your New Testament, look for them offering incense. You won't find it. We don't go to Revelation to find out what we are approved to do now. Revelation is a book of symbols, making an appeal to a symbolic instrument in order to play a real one, get real. That's a play on get milk, got milk, actually. You got milk? You got a real example? Or what I mean by a real example is an example of a real one. But I say get real, a little pun there too. And then finally, Revelation depicts events yet future. That's basically the prevalent understanding. And so, in one case, they're going to the past. Oh, they did it in that covenant, so we can do it. No. And now they're going, we can do it in the future. They do it in the future, so we can do it now. In both cases, you've gone somewhere else to prove what we can do right now. No, stick to our law, our covenant. The organ, a little history. The organ was not introduced into any assembly until Pope Vitalian, which is A.D. 757. That's when he reigned as Pope. That's 600 years, folks. 600 long years, they did not use them. I wonder why. And then when they finally began to introduce it, 200 years of fighting before it was actually accepted. A little lesson here. The one who introduces is the one who causes division. 600 years, they understood. No, we're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. For another 200 years, some of them still understood it. We're not going to. And by the way, these people, I'm guessing, actually weren't even Christians. But we understand. These were people who were claiming to be Christians, claiming to go by the New Testament pattern, and it took them 600 years to throw it in. Does it matter? Does it really matter? What did we talk about this morning in class? Doctrine matters. Do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. The bad company is the company that has the wrong doctrine. John chapter 14. Lee, you're really being too pharisaical. Too much of a literalist here, Lee. You're being too strict, Lee. You've heard it all before. Verse 23, John 14, 23. If anyone loves me, he will just do whatever he wants. Because I don't care what he does as long as his heart's involved. Have you heard it? Yes. Did you read it in the New Testament? No. If anyone loves me, he will keep my word. And my Father will love him, and we will come to him, and we will make our abode with him. He who does not love me does not keep my words. I love God. You might call me a literalist for being too strict, but I love God. And he says, look, if you want to have, here's a key word, fellowship with God, if you want that, keep his commandments. 1 Corinthians 14, 16, and 17. I'm going to send you Timothy, who will remind you of my ways, which are in Jesus Christ, which I teach in every place, everywhere. Little cookie cutter. All the churches basically look the same. Yeah, different people, different times they met, different places they met. But basically, you went to one church, it would be just like going to another church, just like McDonald's. You go to McDonald's in Budapest, you go to McDonald's in New York City, you go to McDonald's in California, guess what you get there? Fries and meat. And then some soda, too. It's the same idea. Yes, there are some things that are different, but Paul set up, and the apostles set up these certain traditions, and he said, keep them. This is one of them. To close out, making melody in the church. In 1 Corinthians chapter 14, the chapter contains a special word over and over. Look in verse 1. Pursue love, 1 Corinthians 14, 1. Now remember, this is the context surrounding praying in tongue, praying, singing with the tongue, singing in the mind, singing in the spirit. Pursue love, yet desire earnestly spiritual gifts. Okay, desire spiritual gifts. Why? Oh, and notice he says desire earnestly. Really? Why? But especially that you may prophesy. Oh, okay, prophecy? Why? Why? Especially why? And so you're paying attention. What's going on here? He's building up to something. For the one who speaks in a tongue does not speak to men but to God. For no one understands but his spirit. He speaks mysteries. But one who prophesies speaks to men for, and here's our word, edification and exhortation and consolation. One who speaks in a tongue edifies himself, but the one who prophesies edifies the church. Verse 5, now I wish that you all spoke in tongues, but even more that you would prophesy, and greater is the one who prophesies than the one who speaks in tongues, unless he interprets, so that the church may receive edifying. And that word is building up. When we are assembled, verse 26, let all things be done for edification. Right now, we're getting together for a spiritual workout. Are you feeling it? Does it burn? It should. Because that's why we're here. Verse 17. The one giving thanks, listen, if you only speak in a tongue and nobody interprets, the one giving thanks well enough is edified, but the other person is not edified. The goal is edification. Verse 19, however, in the church I desire to speak five words with my mind so that I may instruct others also. Remember that word, instruct. Look, we're up here. When the song leader is up here, when whoever is up here, our goal is to edify and to instruct. Ephesians chapter 5. What's the purpose of the singing and making melody? Is it just to sound good and feel good? No. In fact, you would think it's to praise God, except it doesn't say that. Verse 18, do not get drunk with wine, for that is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit. Here's the question. By the way, Jonathan, that's the answer. Who in here wants to be filled with the Spirit? Yep. Okay. The visitors that came and sat where Tony sits right now, a few weeks ago, how did they wait for the Spirit? You might not know this, but they waited until they started to shiver. But that's not what this text says. Be filled with the Spirit. Yes, I need it. Now the participles will tell us how to fill each other with the Spirit. Speaking to one... Be filled is the main verb. Be filled. How? Or with what? With the Spirit. How? Speaking to one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Singing, making melody with your heart to the Lord, always giving thanks. All these participles say, look, you want to be filled with the Spirit? This is what you do. One of them is sing, speak to each other, and make melody with your heart. When we are singing back and forth, we are filling each other up. We all just said, look, I want to be. Yes, okay then, get singing. Get making melody with your heart. Final applications. Pay attention while the church is making melody. Let me repeat that. Pay attention. Hey, attention! Attention! Yeah, we're singing. What are we doing? We're filling each other up. And if you're not paying attention, then you're not getting filled, and I'm not getting filled by you. And I need your help, so please start paying attention. Have you ever seen me not paying attention? I remember a couple years ago, I was teaching a Thursday night class, and it went wrong. In my mind, it went wrong. You guys didn't have a clue, but in my mind, it went wrong. I went back there. Maybe you did have a clue. You didn't tell me. Thank you. I went back there. John Bosworth gets up, and he comes up to me afterwards, and he says, you didn't sing the last two verses. Why not? And I had no clue. I didn't have, because I was way over. That's how bad the class was in my mind. He's like, hey, Lee, snap out of it. We need to feed each other. Participate while the church is. Participate. Pay attention and participate. Song leaders, be informed. Colossians chapter 3. Colossians 3:16. Let the word of Christ richly dwell within you with all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another with psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, singing with thankfulness in your hearts to God. Remember, here's get your heart involved. While you're singing, you're not grumpy. No, I'm thankful. God saved me, a wretch like I am. He saved me. Song. Now, we're all supposed to be filled. In fact, we are filling each other with the words. Richly dwelling. Let the word of Christ richly dwell within you. Song leaders, please be serious in life. You're poring over the text. Not just, okay, I got to lead songs. Give me the blue book so I can get someone up there real quick. That's not what's going on. Hey, I live a life. Now, you might come in here, oh dear, I got to lead songs. But your life is such that you're faithful. You are letting this word come into you every day. And maybe when you know you're going to lead songs, you've been thinking about it for a week, maybe 2 weeks. I don't know how long. But then you have this theme, or not a theme, but you have thought about it. And then be informative. Paul says, I want to instruct others. Yes, we need instruction. We instruct each other through singing songs. And you might say, like Ethan did the other day, I forget exactly what it was. I chose these songs because, and I forget what he said, but I said, that's great. And he helped me out a little bit. So we're not just, oh, it's random. Oh, here, let's check, sing, I've sung. Be informed, be informative, and then be inspiring. Because we need all the help we can get. We're all sinners. Thank you for listening. You listened very well.